Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
And fighting is there! Robbie Brady!
The fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had a cheat.
Well, he overheated another baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Welcome along to the football family here on the 42 with me, Gavin Cooney. Cove Ramblers manager Shane Keegan is here. How are you, Shane?
Not too bad, Gav. You?
Very well, yeah. Football journalist and big supporter of the Sligo Rovers annual draw. David Snout is here as well. Hey, David.
What's the story? How's it going?
Pretty well, yeah. Shane, how are you? How's the head? I mean, we're talking in the glorious afterglow of Cove Ramblers' win in the Munster Senior Cup.
Yeah, good form, Gav. Good form. One or two quick drinks to celebrate, but nothing too mad. No, a different story for the players. I'd say I have had a good night from a couple of them that have resurfaced and sent the odd couple of funny messages into the WhatsApp group there of various different shenanigans, which is so it should be. But happy out. Great win last night. Really, really great win. So it was.
What was the shot that you put up on Twitter? It looked like something that might have been discharged by the Pink Panther.
I'm not sure what the pink one was, to be honest with you, but I'm not able for, like, it kind of, you know, those Bailey's kind of drinks, I'm not able for them. And while
liqueurs.
It's about, liqueurs, yeah. I'd say it's about 15 years since I had one of those green yolks, to be honest with you, but it looked a better bet than the pink thing, so it did. So, the green things are what, apple sours or Mickey Finns or something like that, I'm not sure, so... Mm. It looked the safer option. Still had a fair kick to it now, but it was great. Look, all joking aside, look, it's not the biggest tournament in the world, so it's not, and maybe City might be guffawing at all to a certain extent for celebrating it at all, but look, for us, it was a great win because it's the club centenary. It's the 100-year anniversary of Cove, and you know you've got dinner dances coming up at the end to celebrate it and all that, and just to have a trophy as a centerpiece even on the night at the end of the season, and just to have played, well, not even played as well, but managed the game as well as we did last night. So we were all in very, very good spirits, yeah.
I'm just looking forward to Richard Keyes' latest blog dropping, criticising you for actually celebrating it. But because in fairness, you were right in what you said in terms of there's enough shit goes on in football that when you actually have something to say, you should enjoy it.
It was ideal for us. We played Friday night and we were atrocious against Athlone. I've no idea where the performance came from. I couldn't have predicted in a million years. We'd been so good heading into that game and the training had gone well all week, and whatever happened Friday night, we were atrocious, and thankfully that game came along very, very quickly and a chance to redeem ourselves, because if we hadn't had that game last night with an international break this week, you would have been sitting on that at loan performance for 2 weeks, like, oh Jesus, the thoughts of it. So to be able to go out last night and, like, Cork put out a decent side, like, they made a couple of changes, brought in a couple of younger lads in the middle of the field, but they're very strong back line. Their front three was very, very strong. James Duna, Dylan McGlade, Louis Britton. We would have played a lot better against Cork the last two times we played them in the league and got nothing out of either game. And last night Cork were very, very good. We were on the back foot for nearly the entire game, and it was a large element of luck even to the goal we scored. But it's all about the result, lads. Cup finals, it's only about one thing, isn't it?
It's great anyway to have some silverware on the podcast. Twitter users will realise that there was some kind of Irish podcast awards on this week as well, or last week, sorry, which seemingly we were neither nominated for nor obviously won. So it's good to have something, you know, to share around, and for myself and David to bask in.
What's your shot of choice, Gav?
Oh.
So Shane's is the Pink Panther. I'm a fan
Baby
of Baby Guinness,
I think, is what I was going to say. Baby Guinness, I think.
Yeah, because similarly, the Mighty Beach Park beat, actually down in your neck of the woods, we beat Longford Cruisers 2-0 in the FAI Leinster Cup, I think it was. And Doyle's pub in Longford Town? Literally hasn't gotten outside. Literally looks like most grandmothers' sitting rooms in the 1950s.
Like
inside.
The sound of that place.
But in fairness, they put on a lovely bit of food for us and all the rest of it. A few of us got back to Dublin. There was a good few of us out. And yeah, fucking sculling the Baby Guinness.
Oh, so this was the preamble to your night out on Saturday?
Oh, it wasn't even a night out. I was in bed all the way about 10:15. I went out at five o'clock with a couple of the other kind of older players who would be on the team. few of the younger lads came out because they were staying out a bit later, and I was, what's the word, KO'd would be the easiest way of describing it, in bed by about 10:15, and then woke up to about 4,000 notifications on Twitter, and I was like, what the fuck have I gone, what's going on here? I was like, Jesus.
What happened? You're KO'd in a kind of a Jack Grealish sense.
Like, remember that video when he won the league with Tim, when he's coming out with the two different drinks and all the rest? Well, I was going basically pint of Guinness, baby Guinness, pint of Guinness, baby Guinness. And sure, like, when you have a 4-year-old as well during the week, getting very little sleep while working a bit late on some occasions as well, it was just a recipe for disaster. Toying in as well with bandages in my knee and being in a fair bit of pain, it was just an absolute nightmare.
Good week for David.
Yeah, as always, nice and quiet, nice and quiet. Nice and quiet. But then, in fairness, yeah, but then waking up to be called a thief was pretty funny, I must say.
Go on, for the listeners who aren't on Twitter, do you want to sketch out this story?
Well, see, this is the thing, because, like, and I explained this to your man, was it Mart, is that your man's name?
He's got the League of Ireland Photoshop corner. That's all his, you know. He's that's his badge.
I know, but yeah, I know. I explained it to him, but it was just I think next time I'll wait until at least 11 o'clock before going on the baby Guinness, so I can try and last the pace, because I think that's what I'm putting it down to.
Coming up later in the podcast, we will look ahead to Ireland's Nations League meeting with Scotland on Saturday evening. We'll also preview the Irish Under 21s playoff against Israel, and we will also pick over the FAI Cup quarterfinals and ask, among other questions, how on earth a Bohemians have become so bad. But we will begin this week with a question from the WhatsApp group. Thanks to Aidan Delaney for this. Which current footballer would the panel most like to kick in the stomach? We'll throw it open to the floor. I think I know who David's going to say.
No, you know, this is actually interesting. I remember about 14 years ago, probably. Would have been, what year we know? Yeah, around, no, it wouldn't have been that. Like, maybe around 2010. When did Johnny Evans break into the United team? Was that around 2010, maybe? So 12 years. But anyway, I was doing an interview with Johnny Evans for a Man United fanzine in Carrington. And I asked him this question. I was like, oh, which player would you most like to actually, like, punch right now? And because, like, obviously, when you're that young as well, like, I was still kind of starting out. And it was for a fanzine as well. And one of our questions was some... But anyway, he said Didier Drogba. He was just like, just because he was so hard to play against. And I had mentioned this to someone. We didn't actually run it in the fanzine because we're just like, Johnny Evans is a young lad. This could probably cause him more grief than anything else or whatever. But it got picked up by a newspaper who got wind of it, and they tried to get the audio, or they tried to get the actual details of the interview that Johnny Evans had given when he said that he would have loved him. And he wasn't saying it from a point of view of, oh, Drogba is like a so-and-so. He was just more so saying he's so hard to play against. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in terms of what player, like, who would like to do what Nathan Collins did, I don't know. Like,
you're a pacifist, you know. Yeah, I mean, maybe you don't want to indulge in this at all.
No, like, it's, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't, and there's up. Yeah, I genuinely, this obviously question's caught us on the hop. There's no one that, like, genuinely stands out as an absolute. I know, obviously, maybe back in the time, you probably think, God, yeah, Declan Rice would deserve something like that. But, like, again, that part of the reason why that was so frustrating is because he is a very good player. Mm.
But no, look, in fairness, no one deserves it. I mean, we're not Aidan Delaney or anyone listening.
Do you know what? Angel Di Maria. That's who, probably, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
He got sent off at the weekend for kind of slightly petulant reaction, but it was slightly unfair. What do we think about Nathan Collins, Shane? I mean, will this affect him at all?
Why not get a chance to answer the question first?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I'm just looking ahead to, you know, the local Cove newspaper blowing this up as a headline. Cove manager.
No. You're safe enough on going world superstar rather than local League of Ireland talent. Like, how can anybody argue Kylian Mbappe doesn't need a kick in the ribs? Somebody needs to boot that fella. Mother of God, he wrecks my head.
Oh, no. I like Mbappe.
Ah, stop, will you? No.
He's a brilliant footballer.
Obviously, he's a brilliant footballer, but nah, Jesus, there just seems to be one thing after another with him at the moment. And when you have young impressionable fellas at home thinking that somebody like that is a player to be looking up to. No, no, no.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, there speaks a father, right, really, rather than a football man. Well, I admire your straight talking way of going about this. Like, I mean, Paul Pogba allegedly hired a witch doctor to curse Mbappe. So you're going for a more direct route to taking him out of the French team.
I'm just going to hire Nathan Collins.
Is Nathan Collins, I mean, is he going to be affected by this red card, Shane, do we think?
I would like to think not. No, I would like to think not. He could have done without it. He definitely could have done without it. And I have to say, I do like those little behind the scenes things the FAI have done this week of them all landing in and all of that. And he looks, you know, suitably embarrassed in his attempts to play down James McLean's, I don't know what to call it, praise for the tackle or slagging for the tackle or what to call it. Because he'll know it was a stupid thing and he let his team down on the day and all of that. But thankfully for him, I think he has been playing well enough that I would be amazed if he doesn't come straight back into the team after suspension. And he look everything you guys have got a bit closer to him. I don't know him at all, but from what comes across from him, that did seem extremely out of character. Like, he does seem to be a very sensible fella by and large the vast majority of the time, and you'd like to think it is, as I say, very much out of character, and that his manager will know that, and he should come back into the side. Look, I think he's probably their best centre half already, so I think he does come back into the side when he gets back from it all going well and just learns a lesson.
Yeah, I thought it, the look on his face as he walked off the pitch, I thought it said, oh, my dad is going to kill me for this.
Well, hadn't he given an interview today, was it a Daily Telegraph, wasn't it, that one-on-one, that the morning of the match, kind of saying that no matter what he does, his dad kind of does beyond to him. But I think the FAI put out that video of McLean kind of maybe slagging him, but then I think they seem to have maybe rolled back on it. I don't think it's still up there, is it?
Is it not?
Really?
I think they've removed it, yeah. So, I don't know. Like, I don't think it's going to be... I was making this point today about it, but I think the impression that he's made at Wolves since he's gone in there has been pretty clear. Like, I don't think it's going to be one of them where, like, even though he's done this, where, like, he's going to find it hard to get back into that team. You know, I know obviously Cody has left and stuff, but I still think as soon as his ban is served, like, the way he's kind of settled in there, like, remember we spoke about this earlier before as well, he's just, like, he's kind of ahead of where we maybe expected him to be in terms of importance to that Wolves defence.
The other thing that struck me from that little behind the scenes video, which maybe shouldn't come as much of a surprise to me as it did, but geez, he really is a big man, isn't he?
Yeah, no, he's very tall. Can confirm. This is reporting from the front lines. And yeah. Nathan Collins is tall. He's got, like, I mean, I'm...
But he's more than just tall. Like, he's not gangly. Like, he's a block of a chap.
Yeah, no, he is. Like, this is humble brag here. I'm relatively tall, you know, 6'1", maybe 6'2", if I don't slouch as much. And he's got a few inches on me. He'll be standing tall, I guess, in the Nations League games, starting against Scotland on Saturday. He's an automatic pick in the Ireland team. But there are plenty of other kind of close selection decisions to make, I think. So I have asked you both to pick an Ireland team to face Scotland at Hampden Park on Saturday. Start with you, Dave. I'll start with you both. I assume Bazunu is in nets for you both, is he?
Yep, nailed on.
Well, he just by default, because obviously Kelleher is not there and Travers isn't playing, so
wouldn't make a difference.
I know.
Back three, I suppose. Collins is in there. What position for you, Shane?
Yeah, I have him on the right. I do have Shane Duffy starting. I think there would have been a bigger call to make if Omar Bamadeli hadn't have pulled out. I think you could have went Omar Bamadeli, Nathan Collins, John Egan, if Omar Bamadeli was available. Without him, I think that definitely, if there was a decision there to be made, I'd say now it's an easier one. I would think Shane Duffy does come back into the middle of it with Collins on his right and Egan on his left. That leaves out Dara O'Shea. Maybe he'd be pushing to get in there. But no, I think that'll be the three.
David, what's your back three looking like? Or have you gone fully renegade and gone for a back four?
No, so I think Collins will be in the centre. I think O'Shea will be on the right. I think Egan will be on the left. That's what I think he'd probably go for. This is what I would go for, because I was to pick what my team would be.
And is that based off because they're all playing regularly or any other reason?
It's a combination. So when I was going through, looking at, like, I'm basically using the team that I've picked partly on the basis of the last game against Scotland, not so much against Ukraine as well, but the last game against Scotland when Ireland done so well, but then also where players are at now at the moment. So obviously, I think if Duffy had been playing or getting games, I would have put him in play and to start the game. But I just think, I think it's tough. Not that you can't be right, not that I'm writing him off, but I just think it's a tough game to throw him into when, like, he literally has he kicked the ball? I was trying to look, I literally don't think he's actually kicked the ball this season, has he?
He played in the Carabao Cup. He played one game in the Carabao Cup against, in a game Fulham lost, didn't they? I can't remember against who. Like, is that not a worry for you, Shane? You've obviously picked Duffy in your team, but he's not match sharp at all.
Yeah, this might sound a strange thing to say. I'm not. Two reasons. One, his position. I think in the centre of midfield or something like that, I'd be a bit more concerned if a fella wasn't playing week in, week out. Like, Shane Duffy has massive, massive experience. I don't think, I can't see it being a major issue for him just to slide back in there. He knows the role, he knows what's expected of him. And then the second thing is, Shane Duffy in an Ireland jersey has been a very different man than Shane Duffy in any other jersey for a long, long time now. And it's just like his Superman underneath his shirt. Like, if he rips open that shirt and there's an Ireland jersey underneath, he's a different guy. He's a different guy. So he is. And I just think he's a talisman for us. And I think he'll just stroll back in there as if he wasn't away and head a ball into the back of the net, as well as heading numerous balls away from the back of our own net.
I was just going to say, I like this vision of Shane Duffy striding out onto the Hampden Park pitch wearing like a dress shirt and then ripping it off just for the anthem. Go ahead, Dave. Sorry, Phil.
No, like, again, you can't argue with that logic. I'm just kind of coming at it from the point of view of, because of where Collins is at now, you can just throw him in into the centre of that defence. And I still think you get an awful lot of those qualities of what Duffy can provide. But with, I think at the moment, an extra bit of quality, as he's shown at the weekend, still has that bit of aggression. I just think because of where Dara O'Shea is at the moment, obviously Andrew Omobamadeli, like, I don't know if I'm reading too much into it or just maybe thinking, but the fact that Omobamadeli, when he withdrew and Liam Scales came in, was Kenny's thinking that he was going to be possibly used on the left-hand side, so he already has his mind made up with on the right. So would that mean that he's already thinking, well, Collins will be on the right, or O'Shea, I don't know, and then obviously Egan will be on the left, that's where he does tend to start. But I just think, for me, that's the defence I would go at, because I wouldn't have any issues with a back three. I think a back three, even without Shane Duffy, that would have Dara O'Shea, say it for me, John Egan and Nathan Collins deals with what Scotland have going forward.
Yeah.
But in possession, without getting too technical, in possession, I just think Nathan Collins is limited in possession if he has to play in the middle of the three. I think he's so good striding forward.
It's a bold call to make. He played in the middle and scored. Was it the greatest goal ever scored by an Ireland player against Ukraine?
Yeah, fair point. Yeah, fair point. Normally the middle of three centre halves will have less opportunity to step out with the ball and step into midfield and play passes, which I think he's very, very good at. But
no, in fairness, you make a good point. Like, if you play in the right-hand side, there's more of a chance to step up and step into midfield. That is a good point, actually, that I hadn't really considered too much. Right wing back. Start with you, Shane.
Yeah, I'm amazed that I've got to this point and found myself not saying Matt Doherty, because I think I said it, a while ago that I thought that Matt Doherty would see plenty of playing time by the time we got here, and I'm just stunned. I'm just amazed that he has seen none, pretty much none. I'm going to disagree. I'm going to counter against what I said with Shane Duffy in terms of throwing him back in. I do think there's a very strong argument for Alan Brown getting the start ahead of him at right wing back, and I think he quite possibly will do. Yeah,
I find that remarkable. I mean, it was only in June, like, we were talking about how massive a loss Doherty was, but he's played 18 minutes of football this season, twice off the bench for Spurs. He's not second choice at right wing back, he's third choice. Because Emerson Royale was on the bench against Leicester, and he moved Perisic from the left to the right.
Hold on, Gav. That's a bit of a worry. Yeah, third choice in his position and fourth choice of four wing backs, because we then made a substitution in-game and he was still kicking his heels.
Yeah, that's true. And Sessegnon, yeah, Sessegnon played on the left, yeah. I mean, David, what do you think? I mean, Doherty's such an important player for Ireland, but, like, is it a risk to play him without really playing any football since, what, since March? When did he get that injury?
Yeah, like, no, of course it is a risk. It's a risk in the sense of, like, it's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be, again, a typical cliche here now, but it's Ireland versus Scotland, so you're thinking it's going to be a bit of a frenetic start, and if I suppose you need people who are able to just get straight into a rhythm of a game, don't you? Like, you can't really afford a bit of a slow start, and it's kind of, this is when you have to weigh it up, and obviously Shane will know this much better than me, in terms of, even with, say, the back three, like, you're going to need an element of experience in there. So, like Seamus Coleman, will you discount him? But then I'm thinking back to that game in Dublin, just purely because of a lot of the aggression and the lot of positivity that Ireland showed. And Brown, the way he kind of moved into midfield at times from that, right, like, if you look back for, even with the, was it Obafemi's goal? Remember when Brown kind of reads the play and gets into the midfield, I think he gives you that a little bit, and then even he hasn't been playing week in, week every single minute for Preston either. He's kind of lost space and got back in and got a game, but it's a strange one. I'm kind of thinking, like, in that position, there's no one really who'd be like 100% they definitely should play. Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There really isn't. And I'm kind of going off, this is where I'm kind of going off in my own head. I'm like, well, where did Ireland really actually get the initiative against Scotland before? And I think Brown was actually very important to that. And I don't think that'll be forgotten. So I think, because he has played more football than us, I think Brown, and I would just gut instinct, just be, and maybe it's wrong to just be going off one game that to use it, but that's what I'm kind of using as a template, and I would probably go for Brown just because I think he gave Ireland a fair bit of the initiative in that game in Dublin.
Yeah. At left wing back, the incumbent is James McLean. Is anyone changing that?
I'd go Brady.
I'd be staying with him.
David, you're going Brady.
I'd go Brady, yeah. Yeah,
interesting. Why?
Just because Shane went to James McLean. Otherwise, this part of the podcast would be over very quickly, wouldn't it? To the beauty of football, I'm literally going to contradict everything I said regarding Alan Brown the last time. Sometimes you have something, you're a bit of an instinct on it. I just think if Brady was to come in, I think he could do something in the game. I don't know. I just think of set piece, or I don't know. I just have something in my head. The whole, not so much the emotion around the fact that he's been injured and then got his way back in. I just think a player like that coming back in, it could be just written that you could actually have a serious impact, positive impact in the game. That's purely what I'm thinking.
He is playing regularly at club level as well. Like, you know, I mean, it's not, you know, it's different from the right wing back hole in that sense. Okay, midfield. So the question here is, first of all, how many players you play in a midfield chain? Because there used to be two, and then midway through the last window, having lost back-to-back games, he played three, Cullen, Malumbi, and Knight.
We look so much better with the three, Gav. We look so much better with the three. Both because the midfield looks better and because the front two seems to suit us now, I think. It definitely seems to suit us. So I would think it's a sitter and one off each shoulder, as I would describe it in our dressing room when talking to our lads. That'd be how we would set up. And I would be... With the right wing back... I would be surprised if Robbie Brady got in ahead of James McLean at right wing back and as the third centre half. I think they're literally flip of a coin decisions. I think Matt Doherty or Alan Brown is a flip of a coin. I think Daryl O'Shea, Shane Duffy is a flip of a coin. I will be amazed if our starting midfield three isn't Josh Cullen, Jason Knight and Jason Malumbi.
So no changes there?
No, not for me. I think I would be very, very surprised if that wasn't it.
David?
Yeah, no, I agree there, to be honest. I don't think... And also, because it does seem as if the three players, they're playing, and they seem to be in decent form. Like, Malumbi, some of the reports, he's actually playing well. He stayed fit. So, and again, that midfield, like, that energy, I think, was maybe... I don't know if maybe we're getting the timing of that game as well, and listening to some of the stuff from Scotland, they seem to be saying, well, by the end of that campaign, there was some of them were shot in terms of their energy levels and all the rest of it. So maybe did Ireland just on another day, will this be a totally different game? But yeah, no, that would be the midfield I would go with as well.
Yeah. So that leaves a front two. Shane, who have you picked?
Yeah, I think Chidozie is the most informed Irish player in on current form in that whole squad. I really, really do. I think it's a no-brainer. I would have him back in there. Look, I'm a big fan anyway. I kind of haven't hid that. And as good and all as Michael Obafemi was when he got his opportunity, I just think Chidozie has consistently delivered for Ireland and been very, very good. He has gone from being an important player in League One at right wing back last year to now being an absolutely pivotal player as a member of a front two for Rotherham this year, and he's just playing superb stuff. And I think Troy Parrott is the obvious partner for him. I would say it's I think Stephen's choice is Troy Parrott plus one, but for me that plus one would be Chidozie Igbene, certainly, Gav.
You think Parrott is that nailed down into the team, that it's Parrott plus someone?
I do, yeah, I do, because he offers the balance there. I don't know, as exciting as all and all as it might look speed wise and that, I don't know, could you play Obafemi and Igbene as a front two? Hogan, is he in with a realistic chance of a start? I wouldn't see him there as a starter. So Callum Robinson, you know, good to see him getting the move and getting game time back. But I think for me, it'd be a choice between Igbene and Obafemi to partner Robinson or Parrott. And I would have Parrott ahead of Robinson probably in the pecking order at the moment. Even though, again, a huge fan of Robinson. Okay. And I hope he does get back to where he was, because I thought he was outstanding for us for a 12-month period there, you know.
And David, you're front too?
My initial instinct for this was just to go with Parrott and Obafemi. And then obviously when you have a bit more time to assess fully the options, because again, as I've said this for about 10 times already, I was using the last game as the kind of template to go off. But I'd actually go with probably Obafemi and Igbene as mine, just because I think, and Kenny has spoken about this as well, and he seemed keen to speak about it after Obafemi set up Parrott's goal, saying this is what he does offer this as well. It's not just that he's one of these players who goes in behind or is going to be a goal threat. Like, he's capable of actually dropping a bit and being a bit of a link-up player as well, that he was seeing him do that for Swansea. So, and because he's, I just have a feeling that that's the kind of team that I would go for. Apparently, again, Shane was spot on in terms of Igbene, the consistency levels and that he's found, and also how he's playing at the moment. I just don't see how you can't start him. Like, I know Parrott seems to be getting spoken of very well. He wasn't out there yesterday, but obviously I know you are, and like Brady, you probably know more about what Brady was saying about him and how positive Brady was about Parrott, and even listening to people about how he's played for Preston. I just kind of wonder, in terms of just that, I just kind of, because he has maybe found the net and scored, will that be counted against him a little bit? Do you know? I don't know. But so I have a feeling it could be Obafemi and Igbene.
I would love to see that front two Tuesday night, Gav. I think that's a bit riskier. Pairing those two together is a bit riskier. And but
there's Obafemi and Igbene.
Yeah. I do think we need a kind of a half ten, which is why I think it would need to be either Parrott or Robinson. But I just think against Armenia Tuesday night, bit more of a chance to roll the dice there. And if I'm perfectly honest, I'm going to the game Tuesday night, and that front two would excite the hell out of me to go into the game and sitting down with my young lad and watching it. I'd love to see how that front two would work out, but I think maybe hold fire until Tuesday, maybe, for having a look at that.
Cool. Well, we'll all be there Tuesday night. David and I will be in Glasgow as well. So, listener, we're going to do a quick post-match reaction pod from the bells of Hamden Park on Saturday night that should be on this feed by Sunday morning at the latest. So you can listen back there to find out how badly the lads have got their team selections.
What's yours, Gav? What? Maybe not your whole team, but like, is there anyone that you're thinking?
Well, Abby, obviously I'm gonna go counterproductive to what you've picked. So Max O'Leary is in goal. I think Bazunu, I think Collins in the middle with O'Shea and Egan. I think you'd play Doherty. I think he'll keep the midfield three, although there might be a case for bringing in Hendrick instead of Malumbi, but I don't think he'll do it. I think Brady will come in at left wing back, and I think it'll be Parrott and Obafemi again, I think. But I'm guessing. And believe it or not, listener, I've been wrong before.
Sorry, but it's a good point on Hendrick real quick, because he's actually in a Reading team who no one would have seen where they're at the moment.
Yeah.
Like Paul Lintz, fair play to Paul Lintz.
And he's also playing, I think they've played Laherty at back three, and Hendrick has been one of the more forward eights, off the shoulder, as Shane has described it. So he could, like, he could fit in there pretty well. And we used to think that was his best position for him. Yeah. So I would be interested to see how he do. And he, like, you know, he could play him off the left and link him up with Brady. Off the right, he's linked up well with Doherty in the past. So I wouldn't be shocked if he was brought straight back into the team. But the good news is, like, most of the team are playing regularly, bar, you know, you could pick an 11 of guys who are playing every week, which is great, and which we always haven't had, although it's not maybe our best 11 players, but it's not far off it. Shane, are we going to win this game against Scotland?
Do I have to say something exciting, or
can I realistically
say that I think it's an extremely likely 1-1 draw?
As okay, you. Interesting. Yeah. Dave?
I think it'll be a draw. That's probably where it's looking at, to be honest, yeah. Because obviously Scotland are playing tomorrow, aren't they, as well, against Ukraine, so maybe it depends maybe how that game goes as well. I don't know, imagining they might have to make changes, won't they? Or they might consider making changes, but I just think most instincts now in me would be always say Ireland will draw.
we've learned that from history. Meanwhile, it's Friday night, 7 o'clock is the kickoff time for the first leg of the under-21s Euros playoff against Israel, with the return leg before the senior match next Tuesday. David, I know you were struck with comments from Tyreek Wright ahead of this game.
it's just the passing of time, isn't it? Like, I know everyone, like, people must say, oh well, that's just obvious, isn't it? As you get older, like, that's just what happens. Younger players don't remember older players. But I actually had it as well in the car when I was driving down to my own match, where, like, one of the lads in the car was born the year I started secondary school, and I was just like, oh Jesus. The comment from Tyreek Wright about Mark Hughes was a reminder of Damien Duff saying something similar when he first started working with Shelbourne's the 15s he started with, or the 17s when he went in, and he was saying to one of the strikers, he was like, just back into him like your Mark Hughes, get your arse in front of him. And Duff was saying how the young lad turned around and said, who's Mark Hughes? So that's why that comment just struck. But yeah,
so Wright has only, when he was asked, like, I mean, how much do you know about Mark Hughes, basically said, because he's his manager now at Bradford, and he said, well, I've seen a few goals on TikTok, which is a nice way of learning about Mark Hughes.
Have you also seen that clip of yours that went viral I think it was either at the start of this season or the back end of last season, when the ball, he's on the touchline at Valley Parade, I'm not sure if that's what Bradford's ground is still called, it's probably whatever, but ball's dropping out of the air, and he just kind of, like, controls it with the outside of his foot.
Listen, that young fellow who came on for Arsenal last week probably doesn't even know who Thierry Henry is. Will you stop?
Born in March 2007. This is a slight digression, Shane, but, you know, 15 years of age, is that not too young to be in a first team environment? Because we've seen this in the League of Ireland, like, you know, Evan Ferguson played for Bowes. I think he made his league debut at 14.
I have conflicted thoughts on this. I would always say that I do think you have to look at the physique of the kid because of the biometrics involved here, and that, you know, one 15-year-old can look, you know, like a completely and utterly different human being to another 15-year-old. And, you know, a 17 or an 18-year-old could make his debut and nobody would bat an eyelid. That 17 or 18-year-old could be substantially slighter than a 15-year-old who makes his debut. So you do have to take every case on its merit, I think. But look, on the surface, it does sound a bit early.
But is there not an issue that you can't see? It's just like the mental challenge of walking into a men's dressing room. I couldn't think of a worse place on earth to be than a footballer's dressing room. And to walk in there as a 15-year-old kid? Look, maybe dressing rooms have completely changed now.
They have changed to a certain extent. I don't think it's as hard a challenge walking into them anymore, probably to an extent. And then, again, the same thing applies, Gavin. The maturity and mentality of one 15-year-old can just be, you know, a million miles away from the maturity of another 15-year-old. Like, you know, we've got the guy who scored the winning goal for us last night, right? He's a good bit older than that. James is maybe 19 or that, right? But like,
our lads
in comparison to that. But the point, like, he's 19 years of age. I don't think anybody in our dressing room would disagree with me for me to say he is the most mature person in my dressing room. Like, he's ridiculously level-headed, ridiculously mature, ridiculously even-keel at 19 years of age. He's, you know, and you get fellas like that. You get fellas like that who just possess a level of, it's not self-confidence, sounds like cockiness. It's just, do you know when you know yourself? You know yourself and you're happy in your own skin and you don't have to be somebody to try and impress the lads, that sort of a thing. You know, sometimes you can get young fellas who have that about them, so they might not necessarily be lacking the maturity that's needed.
And it's mad on this, because like when I saw that he played, your man, is it Ethan Nwaneri, is that how you pronounce his name? And I was just assuming, I was like, he's obviously been in and around that first team environment for a while, that they've carefully managed this, etc, etc. But then I saw the quotes from this morning, literally only this morning, from Arteta, saying that he'd only trained twice with them. He'd only actually trained the first team twice, and it was a gut instinct thing, which is, maybe that's why it stuck in my head. When I was going off my own gut instinct about where to play Robbie Brady, sometimes listen to the greats, sometimes we just have it. But with Arteta, I found that a little bit surprising, in the sense that you kind of think, you have this thing, you know, Premier League, any top league really, you know, everything's precise, precision, you know, it's planned, it's meticulous, all the rest of it. But sometimes fella can make just such a good impression. And to tie it in with the fact that Ireland are playing Scotland, that's how Scott McTominay ended up getting into the United Force team when Jose Mourinho was the manager. I think it was around an international break time, and surprisingly enough, United actually had some international players playing, and what you call it, they were short on bodies, and Mourinho said to, I think it was the 23 manager at the time, just send over a couple of bodies, or send over someone we're short, and he sent over McTominay. And he just made a really good impression. Also had that physique as well, because he had this massive growth spurt. But that sometimes that can just be the case, where a manager can just in an instant see something in a player. And you're saying there about knowing yourself. Maybe he saw that straight away. He was like, sometimes fellas can just be ready for it. They really can. Mm. And like, don't get me wrong, I'd be surprised if he's consistently in match day squads. It could be a case of now giving him that taste, see how he reacts, and then managing it that way.
It's so, I know we're veering off topic, Gavin, just very quickly to wrap up on it. It is so exciting when a young lad appears onto a senior training ground for the first time and clearly has something and has a swagger about him. Like, I would have given Ryan Manning's younger brother, Ronan, his Galway United debut at maybe just barely turned 17, still very, very young, you know, coming straight from school into training sessions and stuff like that. And like, I just remember his first couple of training sessions in with us, like, you're just going, ah, oh, I love this. I love the confidence of youth here. I love the swagger and the whole lot. And, look, he's kind of progressing into a fine player. And when you have a player like that, if you do give a kid his debut, you'll keep track of that lad for the next 10 years to see how he's getting on, because you feel a little bit of an affiliation towards him, you know?
It's mad, but on that, in terms of the debut, remember Robbie Keane's debut? Well, I think it was his home debut for Ireland against Argentina in Lansdowne Road, and being at the match and just being so excited by him. And then when the announcer said, oh, man of the match is number 10, and there was a big cheer, thinking people expecting it was going to be Robbie Keane. And then they announced it was Ariel Ortega, and then everyone started booing. But that was, like, that's genuinely remains one of the more exciting matches being at, because we're like what Shane is saying, you're just seeing a young lad, and it's unbelievable, like, to see so much excitement on the pitch. Like.
Yeah. The only time Mick McCarthy ever gave away a team selection or any element of a team selection ahead of time in a second stint with Ireland was to let prospective ticket buyers know that Troy Parrott would be making his debut against in that friendly against New Zealand, for that reason. But obviously Parrott is with the senior side now, and the 21s in his absence are without quite a few players, unfortunately, for this game against Israel. Liam Kerrigan has torn his ACL at Como, which is just devastating for him, so speedy recovery to him. Also missing Luke O'Connell out, Mark McGuinness out, David Harrington out. He's the goalkeeper from Cork City. He was, okay, not likely to play, but Mark McGuinness was going to play at the heart of that defence. Gavin Kilkenny and Joel Bagan are out already with injuries. So when you include the guys who are playing with the senior squad that are eligible for this 21s team, Shane, where it looks like Ireland are going to play Israel in a playoff for the Euros with their third, maybe fourth string 21s team. Like, I mean, if they qualify, this surely must be one of the best achievements in Irish football ever.
Yeah, you're gone fairly deep into your squad now at this stage, aren't you? So it would be a fantastic, and up, fingers crossed, I do think it is still doable. I think the Mark McGuinness one in particular is a huge loss. Gavin, he's kind of a rock there for Jim. He's kind of first name on the team sheet there, and you know, he's a no nonsense, no fuss sort of a fella that you can really, really rely on. And I'm not sure who gets the nod now to go into that position, to be honest with you. Is it Jake O'Brien? Is it Joe Redmond? It's hard to know. I mean, the last time it wasn't Mark McGuinness, Evan Cash in partnership, it was Oisín McEntee, who's, I don't know,
is he injured as well?
Yeah, I don't see him. Don't see him around at all. So it's going to be somebody coming in out of nowhere now to find themselves starting at centre back in obviously what's a huge, huge game. Like, Kerrigan is a fantastic player. It's going to be a big loss as well. But we have some other options there. He's even used kind of small bone narrow off one side there. At times he might look at doing that. Ross Tierney would probably give you a similar option if you wanted to play him narrow off one side. But for me, yeah, it's a pity. McGuinness is certainly going to be the big loss. But look, at the same time, it's still exciting. It's a massive, massive opportunity for him. There's still some really, really super players in that team. You know, it'll be interesting to see who comes in. Will he just go with Smallbone playing a bit deeper now and play him beside Conor Coventry, or will he roll the dice on either of two players that I'd be huge fans of? Would be Dawson Devoy or Joe Hodge. I'd love to see either one come into the centre of midfield there, to be honest with you, so I would. So there's plenty of options. And then I think the Aaron Connolly factor, I am excited about it. Look, he's gone with three different centre forwards in his last three games, so it's not like he has to drop a proven and nailed on starting player for Connolly to come back in. And look, it'll all depend on what sort of conversations are being had there between them and how Connolly looks on the training ground. But for me, I would think he has to. I would feel that I would, if I was in his shoes, I would have to go with Connolly.
Oh, right. You think he'd start?
I would. As I say, partly because it's not like you have a centre forward who's seen you through this campaign and delivered in each and every game for you. For me, that makes it a bit easier to bring Connolly straight back in. I mean, he's had... Meepo Odoko, he's had Evan Ferguson, Keode, you know, he's kind of bounced between a few of them, so it's not like you're being very hard on a particular fella who's got you through the campaign. You know, it could be, can you really hold off until the second leg, you know, before deciding whether to throw him in or not? I'd personally be going for it. I don't know if he will, and if he doesn't, you can absolutely understand why he doesn't. But if you're picking your strongest 11,
yeah, we'll see how that goes. So me and David are obviously going to chat on the podcast on Saturday night. We're also going to be back on Monday to look back at Ireland Scotland and obviously look back at the first leg against Israel in that under 21s playoff. Briefly, just on the FAI Cup over the weekend, semi-final lineup is now confirmed. Derry City at home to Treaty United, and then Waterford will host Shelburne. Shane, you're a man of the First Division. Are you surprised to see two of your First Division brethren in the semi-finals?
I'm not, if I'm perfectly honest about it. Had a phone call from a friend of mine who likes to pick my brains on Fridays before throwing on his League of Ireland accumulators. And he was just, I just said that I thought the two First Division teams being at home was, you know, really leveled up both ties for me, to be honest with you. I thought it really leveled up both ties and gave both teams a chance. I've said to you before, I think I might even have gone as far, David Snaid, to have particularly praised Phoenix Patterson when you hosted the show last week, and Phoenix went on to score an absolute screamer on Friday night. Sensational goal. Stephen Walsh has been the most effective player in the League of Ireland First Division this year for Galway United. What he's done has been fantastic. He should win League of Ireland First Division Player of the Year, but the most talented player in the League of Ireland First Division is Phoenix Patterson. He's got outrageous ability, absolutely outrageous ability, so he has. And Waterford, since I went into the role of Cove, Waterford are the best team we've played, actually. So it didn't surprise me at all. I thought it was a real potential banana skin for Dundalk. Waterford being at home, new owners, there's a bit of a feel-good factor around the place again. Yeah, it didn't shock me. Treaty. Oh, I don't know what to say. Like, I think it's coming now, obviously, because they're into a cup semi-final and people are starting to realise it. But, I mean, it's just sensational, the job that Tommy Barrett is doing. It's absolutely sensational. First year as a club, first year as an entity last year, leads them to the playoffs with probably the lowest budget in the division. And this year, he would still probably be, you know, ourselves at loan themselves. The three of us would all be working off chips, really, so we would. And he has them back in the playoff picture again and now into an FAI Cup semi-final. It's remarkable. It's absolutely remarkable what he's doing. And this, look, he's you know, I would have had conversations with him. He goes about it probably a different way than I would. But they just have it nailed. They have their style of play nailed. Every game they go into, you know before the game that they're not going to try and keep the ball. They will let you have the ball. They'll sit off, they'll defend, they'll play on the counter-attack. But they just have it perfected. Like 36. Imagine beating a team as comfortably as they did. They bet UCD 4-1 on Friday night with 36% possession. But that's every week. Like, that's every week. Like, in the two previous rounds in the FAI Cup, they played two non-league sides. And in both situations, the non-league sides had over 60% possession. And in both cases, Treaty bet them easily. It's just how they play. And they have it perfected.
Is that when you, is that as a manager, he has made sure he's gotten the right fellas in who will play like that for him? Because, like, you can imagine some lads, no matter what level, their egos won't allow it. Like, absolutely. Especially playing non-league teams, be thinking, what's going on here? Like, he's obviously, as a manager then, gotten fellas in, but that's being clever in terms of his own recruitment then.
And his man management skills, David, from everything I'm hearing, are top notch. Like, even when I was there, I wouldn't have had that much. I would have only been overlapping with him in terms of players who would have been bouncing between 19s and seniors. That would have been the only place where our roles would have overlapped. I wouldn't have had anything to do with the first team. I wouldn't have been in his dressing room or anything. So, but I know from talking to fellas that are in his dressing room, I'd still be quite friendly with Mark Ludden and fellas like that. There's a young Leash lad there as well, obviously Colin Connery. His man management skills are just seem to be absolutely top notch. He knows how to motivate them. He knows how to get the most out of them. And you see, a big part of management that kind of gets overlooked is you can have the best game plan in the world and you can be the best tactical thinker in the world, but unless you are able to get 11 fellas to do exactly what you want on match night, all your plans and all your tactical decisions aren't worth a shite. But he seems to be able to send 11 fellas out who will follow to the letter of the law the exact instructions that he requires from them. And when you have that, it gives you a chance, you know.
Any chance of them making the final?
Oh, it was a horrible draw, wasn't it?
Away to Derry, like, it was the, even if you got them at home, it was a
horrible draw for them. And I felt for them because they're, the people running that club behind the scenes are top notch, and it's exactly how a club needs, you know. They're trying to build slowly but surely, and look, they've overachieved, which has made life a little bit easier. They have overachieved, no doubt about it, as we said, based on budget. But
about time. Like, Limerick is one of the biggest underachievers in Irish football. Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, there's a lot. Like,
Steve Finnan was the last. Yeah. Kind of Limerick-related Irish international, yeah, as far as, yeah, I know.
Look, there's a lot of contextual factors down there, Gav. Not so much around why they're not producing more Irish internationals, but around why a League of Ireland team has struggled to be successful down there. The junior football scene down there is probably the strongest of anywhere in the country, and it hampers the potential and the ability of the League of Ireland set up then in ways, to be honest with you. That's kind of what holds it back a little bit. But yeah, look, it... You know, it should be a thriving football city. Absolutely no doubt about it.
Yeah. The other semi-final then is Waterford at home to Shells. David, do you think Waterford do this? Sorry.
Absolutely, Shells. Of course.
Damien Duff Shells. Sorry, I forgot to give them their full title.
Of course they can, especially after what they've done against Dundalk. I said this yesterday on another podcast that will remain nameless, what you call it, but I actually think Waterford will win the cup.
Well, hey, interesting.
I just think it would be the most League of Ireland thing ever to happen, in the sense of what's gone on in that club over the last couple of years, from being in a relegation playoff and the manager who you've just sacked going in to be with the fans, that manager now being involved with Como and signing the likes of Cesc Fabregas and all the rest of it, and what's happened there with the change of ownership, a new manager, the overhauling players. I know Shane has spoken positively about them, but yeah, I don't know. I just think Waterford could win it. Don't know why.
They were playing Shelburne, Damien Duff Shelburne, because Damien Duff Shelburne beat Bowes 3-0 in the quarterfinal. I also
think Shelburne could win the cup, and Derry have a very good chance there.
Yeah. So really strong comments from Derek Pender, the interim Bowes manager, after this game. Called that performance disgraceful. Like, how have things gone so badly there, David?
I know. I wonder how Branagh's feeling about this. So I didn't get to watch the match. I wasn't covering the game. So I was at first just going off messages I was seeing from Bowes supporting people who I know after, and they were fuming. Like, it seems to have turned towards the players toxic very quickly there. Just in terms of talking about like a lack of effort, lack of desire, lack of passion, it just seems everything that had been kind of built, the foundations that had been built by Keith Long, bit by bit it was getting chipped away by the model that's there, in terms of not so much the model, but how it's been run, in the sense of obviously having to losing players, then trying to rebuild. And he's only been able to do it for so long, and bit by bit the quality was dropping. Like, even this year, think about it, like we've already mentioned Dawson Devoy, like Ross Tierney, who's only gone there as well. If I can promise I'm a share as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, literally, these are all players who've left in the space of a year. Two of them have left this season. It's just caught up with them. And it's going to be a case now of, with the next manager coming in, that decision being right, and then that manager being back to be able to get players in who can do the basics of actually working hard, because that seems to have been what let them down. Like, it was in one of the WhatsApp groups, I mean, it was put in saying, looked as if Shelburne were an actual team and a cohesive unit that knew what they were trying to do, and Bowles was just a lot of fellas thrown together.
Yeah, thrown together, maybe understandable given they've no manager at the moment, Shane, or no permanent manager. Does this result in performance not expose the decision to sack Keith Long as hasty?
Maybe. Look, the angle I would come at it from here, Gav, is this season for Bowes, for Keith, reminds me personally quite a bit of my second season at Galway United, in that I would always have prided myself on bringing the right kind of people into the dressing room, knowing exactly what I needed in terms of the quality of the player and the quality of the person, and doing my homework and my background and signing the, you know, by and large, my signings working out for me quite well. In my second year at Galway, pressure was on me to bounce straight back up. All of a sudden, I took a little bit more of a scattergun approach in terms of signing any kind of quality players at all, or people who had a track record at all that I thought I could get in, rather than pinpointing specific people who suited what we needed at the time. And it backfired on me massively. And I think there's an element of that with Bowes this year. I think, you know, it's amazing what Keith managed to do kind of year after year in terms of, right, we've lost him. Okay, who can I get that looks like him, or that can do that job, or has the potential to do that job? That was kind of all was the approach they took. And again, massive background checks on the personality type of the person they were bringing in. I don't know, has that been as on the ball this time round? I think it's been more of a scattergun approach of just grabbing anybody that's available to get. I think they're, you know, certainly without going into names, there's, you know, you look at the dressing room and it's, to me, it doesn't have the same personality and makeup of previous Bohemians dressing rooms. And yeah, it's going to be hard to retrieve much from the rest of this season now, to be honest with you, you know.
Yeah, and even next season, if these guys are on lengthier contracts, which they appear to be, or some of them are anyway, you know, this doesn't look like a short-term fix. Ironically, Bowes, having had so much turnover in squad in the previous few years, might lament there not being enough turnover this year. Next year.
Just a point quickly on that. It also that, like, clubs are already planning for next season. So the longer they leave it in terms of appointing their own that new manager who will want to get his own players in, like, they're going to just fall further and further behind. So they're gonna be stuck with maybe players who have got serious kind of making up to do in terms of their standing among some of the support. But then also, like Shane was saying there, we're kind of scratching around to get players. Are they gonna be in that position again where they're gonna be losing out on, say, possible A, B, C, and D targets because they've already gone elsewhere? Because that's what's gonna be happening over the next little while.
Very briefly, Shane, we have a couple of minutes left, and I am interested in something that you raised there, in terms of making sure you get the right personalities into the dressing room as much as the right players. How do you scout that?
You try and talk to players who've shared dressing rooms with him, who you might have some sort of relationship with and who you think you can trust their opinion. Obviously, the same applies to management and management staff. Doesn't necessarily have to be the manager. Could be the goalkeeping coach. You might know the goalkeeping coach at a club where he was previously. And most important, Gav, where I would have made a couple of errors maybe in the past that I try and be aware of now is you need to find out about a person's personality under different circumstances. So if you, I could talk to you, Gav, and you could have had a player in a season where everything went swimmingly for ye and where said player was starting week in, week out, and you could sing his praises from the rooftops. Never gave you an ounce of trouble, the greatest bit of stuff you've come across. You know, no issues with him whatsoever. Okay, now can we find a situation, can we find somebody to talk to where said player, you know, was in a team that was struggling or was finding tough life a bit tougher? Can we find somebody who was around that player when he wasn't named in the starting 11 every week? Is he still a solid character? Do you get me? Or now is he an altogether different beast to try and deal with? And I think that's massively, massively important. We had this conversation before where I spoke about John Mountainy, and the reason I held John Mountainy up on a pedestal was because John Mountainy was John Mountainy every Monday morning, regardless of whether he had started Friday night or not started Friday night, regardless of whether they had won Friday night or not won Friday night, regardless of whether he was good Friday night or not good Friday night, he was just the same person. And that's absolutely, you just cannot put enough of a price on that sort of a character for me, you know?
The GoPro.
Well, the good news is for you both that obviously the 42 do similar background checks on all their podcast guests. So congratulations to you both. That is enough for this week. David, thanks very much.
No worries, Gav. Good to have you back.
Oh, it's great to be back. Shane, thanks very much.
I miss the, I don't know, what would I call it? Erratic approach of David's presenting style. I thought it was
this is the biggest backhanded compliment I've ever heard.
everything runs too smoothly when you're around, Gav.
that's not a good thing. I don't think that's what listeners want. You know, they want three lads in a pub around points. Well, here I am.
I don't think
boringly steering the conversation onward.
Well, in fact, I don't think so, because like one of the things I kept on saying was, one more thing, Shane. What else was there?
Listener, do get in touch with us if you want to. GavinCooney@the42.ie is my email. You can also join the WhatsApp group. That's where you'll join the conversation, as it were. And you can also submit questions for David and Shane there. So do that, join that WhatsApp group. As I trip over my outro, I haven't been praised for it by Shane. It's all described in the episode description of this podcast. As we said, David and I will be chatting from Hampden Park on Saturday night, and then we'll be back assembled around these microphones next Monday morning. But until then, took it all for granted, gonna end up homeless. I hid behind the surreal. I'm a bit too much. How you getting on? Better, good as yourself. Look it up. But I couldn't sleep for shit, so I shot a bad Chris. And I never take risks. I've a rusty tongue, clumsy lungs, and they call me safety funds. The safest of all fun. And I said I lived in a tent, in my back garden, to anyone who'd listen. In a tent, for attention. When I do nothing, inevitable depression. When I do nothing.